This weekend, music lovers will be left spinning with the variety of live music choices. Friday night, the Kalamazoo Symphony presents a Beethoven and Strauss concert, and Bela Fleck joins the string quartet Brooklyn Rider on Saturday night in Chenery Auditorium. There's also the Battle Creek Symphony's Escape to Italy program on Saturday in W.K. Kellogg Auditorium. Or at Kalamazoo College, the Kalamazoo Philharmonia performs a work that changed music forever, Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. And on Sunday, the Merling Trio takes on the delightful piano quintet Opus 81 by Dvorak and remembers composer C. Curtis Smith in performance. Violinist Junqing Lin, concertmaster of the Atlanta Symphony, is appearing in two of the aforementioned concerts. On Saturday night, he'll play a concerto with the Kalamazoo Philharmonia, conducted by Andrew Kohler. Then on Sunday, he'll pick up his viola and Andrew his violin to join the Merling Trio to play the Dvorak Quintet. Junqing Lin is my guest this hour, along with violinist Renata Knifik of the Merling Trio, who will join us a little later. Here's Junqing Lin on what he's prepared for Saturday night with the Kalamazoo Philharmonia.
I'm playing the first violin concerto of Sergei Prokofiev, a relatively early work of his. It's a work that I've worked on as a student and actually as a professional a few times, but I've never had a chance to play it with a full orchestra. So I'm really looking forward to that opportunity. Andrew presented this opportunity to me last year, and I agreed almost, you know, as quickly as I could, just making sure that my schedule was free. And due to my circumstances in Atlanta, my schedule was very free. So I'm glad to be here and excited to be playing this for the first time with a full orchestra.
Yeah, you've had a rough professional year, as with all of your co-musicians in the Atlanta Symphony.
Yeah, there was a extended lockout of 9 weeks that is on top of a lockout that we experienced just two years ago. And there are many issues in Atlanta that needed to be resolved and are on the way, hopefully, to being resolved. But let's talk about happier things right now this week here.
I know. When you get into the topic of musicians and strikes and management, and it can be where you really can't talk about certain things. And everyone's hoping for the best, though.
Yeah. I think the feeling in Atlanta is that this time, in the previous lockout 2 years ago, I think part of the reason that we were in the situation that we're in this year was because we capitulated so quickly 2 years ago. And I think that the orchestra, Atlanta Symphony Orchestra management, felt like they could use the same tactics and make us bend again. And this time, I feel like with the settlement that was just announced, that we didn't bend and actually, to the extent you can have a win after losing 9 weeks of salary, I think that's how I would characterize it.
That's good. Yeah. I don't have anything to say, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was a tough situation, and I, this was an interesting situation with this lockout that a lot of it was fought over social media. And we had an enormous network of bloggers and people in support of us in social media. And I think that there was actual pressure that was put on our orchestra management by social media. So it was interesting to see that because, again, it was a lot different than any other work stoppage I'd participated in. So, but anyway, back to Prokofiev's first violin concerto.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was lucky enough to talk to the conductor, Andrew Kohler, earlier this week, and he talked about the Prokofiev concerto, which is on the program on Saturday. This concerto, he said, comes from the 1920s or so and was premiered in Paris, so it fits with the theme of his program, which is the Ballet Russe.
Yes. It's a very early work of his, and I feel I have a certain affinity for Prokofiev because one of my instructors at the Curtis Institute of music was Yasha Brodsky, who is an older Russian gentleman and actually a friend and colleague of Prokofiev's. And so he had an opportunity to work on this concerto and perform it with Prokofiev conducting. So I look back on my lessons with Mr. Brodsky on all things Prokofiev. I did the first concerto, the second concerto, the two sonatas with him. And I realize now what an affinity he had for Prokofiev's music and Prokofiev's language. And so to the extent that I can be a descendant of that legacy, hopefully, I'm hoping that comes through the affinity and the love of Prokofiev. Prokofiev is one of my favorite composers. Just I love the humor, the kind of, he and I have the same cynical sense of humor, I like to think. And but just there are moments that are just so extraordinarily beautiful that are all Prokofiev. So there's a certain language that Prokofiev has in his writing that the minute you hear it, you know it's him. And that's, to me, that's the mark of a great composer.
So Prokofiev did something kind of unusual in the structure of this concerto, where we have a slow first movement and then a slow last movement, and the fast stuff comes in the middle.
Yeah, well, it's good, because if you wrote more fast stuff, I would be in real trouble. The fast stuff is really hard, and it's wonderful the way he manages to make the concerto kind of come full circle. It ends with the same theme from the opening of the first movement. The last movement ends with that same music, and it really is, it's a remarkable piece. When I was studying it, I guess I knew it was beautiful, but as I've been practicing the last couple of months for this performance, I've had a new appreciation for how wonderful a piece it is.
I'm talking to Junqing Lin, the concertmaster of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, who's performing the Prokofiev Concerto this Saturday with the Kalamazoo Philharmonia. Let's take a break and hear a movement from the Prokofiev, and then we'll be back with violinist Renata Knifik as well to talk about the Merling Trio Concert on Sunday, which includes Junqing Lin and Andrew Kohler as the violinist. Music from Prokofiev's Violin Concerto No. 1, played by David Oistrakh in a radio recording from the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra. Junqing Lin is the soloist this Saturday with the Kalamazoo Philharmonia, playing at Kalamazoo College in the Light Fine Arts Building at 8 o'clock Saturday night. Joining us now is violinist Renata Knifik, who is the professor of violin at Western Michigan University. The Merling Trio performs on Sunday at 3 o'clock, and it's the Merling Trio with friends, and featuring the great work, the Piano Quintet, Opus 81 in A Major by Antonín Dvořák. Renata, I'm getting the sense that bringing together friends with the Merling Trio is something that you like to do on a regular basis.
Yes, and those collaborations, you know, chamber music is one of those wonderful dialogues you can have. We play a lot of concerts just as a trio, but collaborating on just great works is something that we totally enjoy, and especially brings great friends and great musicians, you know, very inspiring to us. So we always try to do one of these, you know, situations to home, and bring also more than just Merling Trio to our community. You
know? The Merling Trio had an anniversary, not this year, but...
we've been together 27 years.
Wow.
So usually, you know, groups' names survive, but not the members. But we're original members, so we're all trio, but hopefully don't look that old. But we've been together 27 years.
Just by looking at it, I am thinking that the program that you intended changed after September, when the longtime professor of composition at Western Michigan University, C. Curtis Smith, passed away.
Yes, that was quite a shock, although his health's been deteriorating. However, I saw him last time he came to my recital, September 17th, and seemed very up and actually apparently working on his future plans. But the news came as a shock. So we thought, since Trio had a long relationship and we commissioned work from him, Piano Trio that we premiered in Carnegie Hall in 93, and I've done a lot of work with Curtis, pretty much every violin part that he ever written, he would run by me, and so there's been very, very long relationship, and he was a very unusual, very special man. He also introduced me to Balcom, and that's how the whole recording of sonatas happened. So, you know, it's a very sad situation. I will miss him. But we felt that this will be a great way to say thank you and remember him. We're going to play slow movement, middle movement of his second piano trio that we actually commissioned, Secret Heart of Sound. He actually written that before 92, where he composed this trio, and he put it as a middle movement of the trio. So very, very beautiful, sad and warm at the same time, very, very Curtis kind of movement.
This was one of the pieces that first opened the door for me with Curtis's style of composition and the things he liked to say and observe in his music. It's a really special recording to me that you did with the Merling Trio, and I would recommend it to anyone on the Albany label. And this may be one of the first opportunities for the many, many listeners who knew Curtis and would have chatted with him at all the concerts he attended, right, to come together. Yeah. I know a memorial is in the future, but
yes, but we felt, since we are playing a very major concert at Dalton, it would be a mess if we couldn't remember him.
Sure.
In some ways, you know.
Yeah, it is something that kind of is taking its time to process in some ways.
Well, yeah. It was very hard because since he doesn't have much family, and so it is painstaking trying to figure out the right way and a family and everybody. So I think everything is in order, and we will, you know, I've met him the first when I auditioned here. He handed me all kinds of scores and recruited me to work with him. And in fact, he was a great pianist. I played many recitals with him to begin with, like Brahms Sonata in D minor. Funny enough, I just played it in September.
And with Sylvia.
Kind of, with Sylvia. So it was kind of eerie to think about that. But he was here. I mean, he was a prolific composer, but he was actually at Western's piano faculty, which was kind of interesting, you know.
Well,
so anyway, so it's sad, but you know, we always will remember him with his incredible way of knowing the best in food, wine, and music.
One thing I would have wished for him was a greater recognition and more people knowing and appreciating his music. And, of course, that can still happen.
Oh, yeah.
I feel that many of his pieces will endure. And if you're still new to Curtis's music, this is a wonderful way to get to know his music on Sunday afternoon in a free concert with the Merling Trio and friends. Let's hear a little bit of the Merling Trio's performance of the Secret Heart of Sound Trio. Here's a middle movement from their 1992 release on Albany Records. Thank you. music by C. Curtis Smith. Fascinating piece, The Secret Heart of Sound. And this is actually part of a phase in his career when he was using West African patterns and melodic gestures in his music.
72-note melodies, and very interesting. Sounds very smooth to everyone, but the counting and the concentration is pretty remarkable. But we had lots of success with the piece. We probably, if I say we performed this close to 150 times, I won't, you know. So it you know, and people seem to take in, although contemporary music, people took in to his writing, especially this piece.
Yes, certainly. I can't help but wonder, with all of the rehearsal and all of the precision required in timing and getting in your little 16th gestures here and there within the piece, that when you go to, you know, spruce it up again for a live performance on, like, on Sunday, if it all just sort of falls right back into place, you can...
Kind of, you know, there are still certain difficulties, but since we perform so many times, things come back and you see them maybe a little clearer, you know. Coming back to music, it's always very interesting. It's sort of putting old shoe, but you still have to little fix it up, clean it up, polish it a little bit, yeah.
Well, up next is the major work on the program, and that's Dvorak's Quintet in A Major, Opus 81. Such a vital piece for quintet repertoire. I was surprised to hear you say, Renata, that Merling Trio pianist Susan Uchimura, is this her debut with a piece?
I think so, but I reserve that. she can answer that, but she loves the piece, and we never played as a collaboration. We played a lot of quintets and quartets. In fact, with Chen Qing, a lot of performances of Brahms and
Schumann
and yeah. but we didn't do this, and of course it's a quintet, so we need another violinist, and Chen Qing will send him to viola part, since he's incredible violist and violinist, of course. But we have Andrew Kohler come in, and again, first collaboration with him. He's a wonderful violinist. I sure look forward to working with him at that setting. You know,
I think that's a feature of the concert that it's a bit surprising. I don't think we've seen Andrew in a sort of chamber music context here in Kalamazoo yet.
Has he been holding out on you?
I've seen him in the Kalamazoo Symphony playing, and of course, he conducts two orchestras. So. Mm-hmm. As a violinist, though, I think this is a new thing.
Yes.
Well, I'm sure he's a considering how wonderful he is as a conductor. I'm looking forward to seeing him play the violin. Also, actually, I don't know if it's a morbid curiosity, but I think we're all excited. It's you know, with the theme of the concert being friends, and it was very moving about Curtis Smith, and to hear the friend level kind of taken, amplified even more. It's great to play with the Merling Trio. I think I played a Brahms quartet the last time I was here, but I've known these guys for, Renata and I were counting off air, almost 30 years. I think we need to have an anniversary concert next year.
Next year, but
I'm excited to, I played this piece actually on violin. I've played both violin parts, so this is a good opportunity to play the viola part for once.
What's it like to play the Dvorak Quintet?
There's so much beauty, and it's so fun because he writes all these dances, although, you know, I mean, there is the Dumki, which is such an indulgent, melancholic, you know, typical Eastern European, you're happy when you're miserable kind of stuff.
Well,
you know?
And it's a viola solo.
And so it's a huge viola solo, I was going to say. It's
well, like, I will be indulging that,
yes,
thank you.
Yes. And then, you know, the dances like the Furiant, in the third movement, pretty much a polka taken in a sort of fugue way and last movement. And it's massive, but yet so he thins out the texture at a very special moments. I mean, the cello solo, the viola leading slow movements, and it's a typical Dvořák takes you from totally happy to totally kind of melancholic, and I just think it's one of his best works.
Yeah,
right? I mean, it's just, I love all works, and of course the trios and all the others, but this is really, and it's orchestral at times, and it just brings, and you feel like he's written all these themes stealing from folk dances, but no, it's in a style, but none of it is original, any kind of original songs, you know, or dances. So, but it's really, you I hope audience enjoy as much listening to it and as we will enjoy playing it.
It's one of my favorite pieces by one of my favorite pieces of all time, but also one of my favorite pieces by Dvořák. It sums up everything that we think of as great about Dvořák. I mean, just the melodies, the way he weaves, the way he modulates. Yeah, he modulates a lot. But
the keys are insane.
Yeah, exactly.
But they sound very friendly.
Yeah, he goes to some places we're not used to going to. So,
Do you have the experience where you start the piece and before you know it, you've reached the end, even though it's a really substantial piece, or are you feeling it?
It's a big piece. I think we realize
each movement has such a life in itself. You know, so you know, the first movement is magnificent. You could like almost present each movement independently get, you know. So I don't think so. I think sometimes the movements might go by, but I don't think the piece in itself.
It's massive.
It's massive. It's low, you know,
really big.
Yeah, 40 something minutes. But, depends how indulgent he will get.
Hey. Gonna make me play viola, you'll get what you like.
Isn't that the best thing about music, though, is you can't feel time necessarily? When you're doing something you love like that, it you realize with the blink of an eye you've just been immersed in music
almost an hour. Very often concerts, you know, you play and you're supposed to play hour and a half concert or say hour and 15 without intermission of chamber music. And we just came back off the tour on East Coast, and you know, the couple of concerts, kind of a potpourri of two Brahms and two this, and it's really, it's the, when you play great music, it does go by. You just get so immersed in what you're doing, and you know, and what's better way than in chamber music? There's so much conversation and so much fun, you know. And I just think I'm very lucky to be able to do that much of it, you know.
Well, and I think this collaboration that we have is really special to me. It's to come together with friends that I've known and learned with and essentially grown up with. To come back and be able to play with them, it's so easy on so many levels that there's so many things we don't have to discuss because we know each other very well, and hopefully Andrew won't get in the way of that. I'm sure he'll be great, but you know, playing with Renata and Bruce and Sue is something that I look forward to, and I'm glad that we seem to be able to do it every couple of years or every year now, it seems like. So, and we're going to be playing Dvořák again with another friend in February.
Yes.
So in West Palm Beach. So we'll have another moment to get together.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
So,
well planned.
Yes. Yeah, well planned. Yeah. Very well.
I guess we're kind of having a moment where we realize there are, you know, we will be losing people from time to time, really important musicians and people who made a huge impact. And it's something you pay more attention to, you know, this when you're a little older and you have, a long friendships and long collaborations. Maybe that's a bit of the downside, but the upside is you do see the impact that is and legacies that have been left, and the fact that music is such a positive, joyful thing makes it turn into more of a celebration.
Right.
As
very important to celebrate the life. I mean, as sad as the losing someone is, they are contributed so much. We shouldn't, I mean, It's very there will be always a void, a hole with a person filled in your life. But since Curtis, for example, left us a music that we can enjoy, we should always try to celebrate what they're done and lift our spirits with that, because that's, you know, you pass on, you keep passing right. on.
Well,
you
know. Just like with Dvorak, we're still talking about his wonderful music too, you know, and that's one of the great things we get to do in classical music is to remember the wonderful, wonderful achievements and beauty of past minds.
I always feel that if politicians had to play chamber music, we'd have a much better world out there.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, I think we can leave it with that.
Yeah.
I'm going to play some Dvorak, and I'll say thank you, Renata, and thank you, Chen Cheng, for coming again.
Thank you.
Thank you.